morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 5th of March. It's All Things Political. Before we get rolling, I do want to thank the Milwaukee Repertory Theater for inviting me to moderate a really good discussion yesterday. Their performance of To Kill a Mockingbird is continuing through this week, and it's really a must-see. It was a panel of community leaders, and we fairly frankly and directly discussed issues of race in the city of Milwaukee and the power of this play. The Rep is part of the Big Read program, a very worthwhile venture. There were a lot of young people on the panel, and the play is not to be missed, so they're doing very good work, and it's good to let people know when they're doing very good work. John McCormick is our guest this hour. John, born and raised in Baldwin, Wisconsin, and he is a staff writer for the Weekly Standard. We have a lot to talk about. Rush Limbaugh's comments continue to dominate a lot of the news over the last few days, and we will talk about that. As I said, Senator John McCain, the latest Republican to say that it was totally acceptable for Limbaugh to call a law student a slut in the furor over birth control and her comments before Congress. We will talk about Rush Limbaugh and his role in the Republican Party, and I know advertisers have left the show, and many of you will have thoughts about what he had to say and what his role is in Republican circles. John McCormick has written a lot recently about Mitt Romney, quoting him, saying, "I'm a person with extensive experience in the private sector. I understand job creation from a personal standpoint. I think this president has taken us in a very dangerous direction." And he also said, you know, it's easy to excite the base with incendiary comments. John writes, Romney's comments seem to reveal that he doesn't have a very high opinion of the base of the Republican Party. Does he really think the majority of Republican voters are motivated by angry rhetoric? Even if that were true, it's not a smart thing for a Republican presidential candidate to say. And a lot of commentators over the weekend are saying they really believe that tomorrow Mitt Romney will pretty much secure the nomination. I wonder if John feels the same. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, and we'll welcome your comments throughout the whole hour. Hello, John.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Thanks so much for being with us.
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Happy Almost Super Tuesday. Big day coming up. Let's start with Rush Limbaugh, because he certainly has been all over the news the past few days. Let me quote just part of a sentence that Maureen Dowd wrote yesterday to see what you think of her comments. "Once you accept the fact that he, Rush Limbaugh, has become the puppet master of the Republican Party by stirring bloodlust, you still cringe at the thought that your mom might hear the ugly things that he said." What is his role in the Republican Party, and what are your comments about his comments?
His role in the Republican Party is that he's a very influential conservative. He always has been a very influential conservative. The idea that he is somehow the leader of the Republican Party and that Republicans fall, lockstep behind him is a great exaggeration. The best example would be in 2008 when Rush Limbaugh went full-on anti-John McCain nonstop. He stopped McCain, stopped McCain. Who ended up being the nominee of the Republican Party? John McCain. So I would say that's, you know, his role. He's still very important, very influential. Hard to think of a media figure who is more important. As for the comments themselves, they are obviously a terrible thing to say. No woman anywhere, no matter what, should be called that name. I would add, thirdly, I do think that it's ridiculous that this has become such a great focus, that one talk radio show host's deplorable rhetoric rather than the actual public policy debate has become the focus. Because, I mean, let's remember what we're talking about here. We're talking about the federal government creating a new mandate that will require all employers to provide, things that they might object to on moral or religious grounds, such as birth control pills if they're a devout practicing Catholic, or even abortion pills with abortifacients that can act in the very early pregnancy. And there are people of all faith and no faith who might object to that. So that's what I've been trying to focus on, is a public policy debate that the other side of the aisle, the Democratic Party, Senator Schumer said last week they want a contraception ban. The Obama campaign said that this policy will amount to women having to get a permission slip from their employers to, quote-unquote, use contraception, not to buy it, to use it. Senator Lautenberg from New Jersey said that Republicans wanted to take us back to the dark ages when women could be sold and traded. So there's been a lot of incendiary rhetoric out there, a lot of false rhetoric, and it's fine to bring up Rush, and we can say that's wrong, and I think that we should just remember the broader discussion here, and that there are still a lot of important issues relating to health care, conscience rights, First Amendment. There are some really important principles that both sides of this argument are debating, and that we shouldn't have them lost over one comment.
Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, he speaks to millions of people, and the comments were just so incendiary and so raw and actually kind of weird in a way that it's only natural that people are going to make hay of it, and the Democrats will, and some of the Republicans will as well. So I want to continue on this for a moment. Was his apology enough to just sort of let this go? Is it a right response for advertisers to withdraw their sponsorship of his show? And does it also perhaps indicate that the Republicans might be a little off base in taking this particular issue instead of focusing on jobs and the issues that most people are most concerned about right now?
Well, I would say, Republicans are quote-unquote focusing on this because it's a new measure. This is a new provocation. This is a mandate that goes into effect in August. They didn't start this fight, but they're not giving in. In August, the federal government will have a new unchecked authority. It's already had this authority granted to it by the health care law to mandate to private companies what procedures and services they must provide free of charge as a part of their health care benefits plan. And that's just going to drive up the cost, first of all, on an economic issue. And as a matter of, First Amendment principles, that could get in a situation where you force some people, colleges run by Catholic nuns. There's Belmont Abbey College. The Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. has so many secular employees that it isn't excluded by this policy. And it's self-insured. So the insurer and the institution are the exact same entity. So you're saying that the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., and there are other archdioceses like this, other Catholic hospitals, universities, are going to be paying directly for things that are in contradiction to the teachings of their faith and their morals. It's bad. Is this issue bad when people focus on how nasty Rush's comments are? Yes. I would point out, on the other hand, that Bill Maher, the HBO host who gave $1 million to Barack Obama's super PAC, has used equally incendiary language, calling women derogatory words, which I won't even repeat because they're so disgusting. And Ed Schultz, MSNBC talker, has been a special guest of the White House. He's gone to President Obama's White House, met with David Axelrod at a special meeting for liberal media types, and he called Laura Ingraham a right-wing slut last year. And President Obama wasn't expected to jump up and denounce this because everyone realized he's just a talk radio host. Now, does Rush Limbaugh have more influence than Ed Schultz or Bill Maher? Sure. He's more popular, but I think that if you're going to make this into a national issue, at least someone should have at least asked the president's press secretary if he was going to denounce the comments of his ally Ed Schultz and his mega donor Bill Maher.
Well, I think Ed Schultz's comments were, people did mention them, and he took some heat for it. But that's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about Rush Limbaugh. The other thing that, you just wonder what he was thinking when he talked about, let's put these videos up so we can all watch them. There was something creepy about all the comments, I thought.
Yeah, it was creepy, and I would say it was creepy. It was bad. I don't dispute that. And the point I'm making with Ed Schultz and Bill Maher is that while media types, and we're both in different ways and media types, and we can comment on that, but there isn't this expectation that when a liberal talk radio host or TV host says something completely deplorable, there isn't this expectation that Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama have to answer for them. But when Rush Limbaugh says something incendiary, the mainstream press thinks that it's John Boehner's responsibility to go out and condemn it, that John Boehner somehow bears responsibility for this. I don't know why that is. I don't know why that double standard exists. I could see it if it were one way, if Barack Obama were expected, if the press secretary even were expected to comment on every single time a liberal talk radio host says something that's bad or incendiary or deplorable. That's just what is so irksome to me. Yeah, I don't dispute that. What he said was just, I mean, you're on 15 on radio 15 hours a week, and you say some stupid things. That doesn't justify anything that he said. And I'm more than happy to say, as just a person, that that's wrong. And he apologized. And whether he needs to apologize more, I don't know. I guess it depends on whether the Georgetown student accepts the apology and finds it good enough. I didn't read the exact words that were used by Limbaugh. Apologize.
What do Republicans do? Because he has a very influential show. There are Republican candidates who repeatedly appear on his program. They need his audience. He's an influential guy. Let's face it, he just is. What do you do with his show right now as you're in a presidential campaign? Do you stay off his air?
Would that be smart for them? Probably, I guess. I don't know. I don't really know for sure. I mean, right now, obviously, that would be a smart politically tactical thing to do. On the other hand, I don't know. I mean, actually, I don't think Rush has a lot of guests on. I mean, he's pretty much just riffing 3 hours a day. I mean, I haven't listened to a whole show in a long time, but he doesn't actually interview candidates so much as he basically just, you know, goes to the news and comments and provides some analysis, and then he talks with listeners. But I don't think that I can't actually recall him, and I could be wrong here. I'm just going on memory. I don't think he actually does have Republican candidates on too much.
Let's talk about Super Tuesday before we go to phone calls and what's going to be happening tomorrow. The common wisdom among many people the last couple days is that Romney may just wrap it up tomorrow. Do you agree?
Well, he might be able to quote-unquote wrap it up in terms of momentum and appearance, but mathematically he just can't. And that's because the Republicans changed the rules of their nominating process this year so that there are fewer delegates awarded on Super Tuesday, and there are fewer delegates that are awarded, fewer states that award their delegates on a winner-take-all basis. Actually, they'll almost all be proportional tomorrow unless candidates can break these certain thresholds, like get 50% of the vote in Oklahoma or Ohio, and then they'll win all the delegates. So as a simple matter of math, I don't think that that's the case, but if Mitt Romney could come in and win Ohio, and if he could even pull off an upset in Tennessee, I think that would pretty much put him on the easy path towards victory. On the other hand, if Santorum wins in Ohio, and he's right now on the path to win in Tennessee, and if he pulls off a big win in some of these other states, Oklahoma, for example, has just as many delegates as Massachusetts, and I think Virginia, if Santorum can hit 50% there, he can get all the delegates in Oklahoma. So I think that this race isn't over quite yet, and I think that it'll be over. I wouldn't expect it to be over any time before the end of April, really.
Really?
Yeah. So I would. Yeah, I think it's going to keep going. And whether I think that had Santorum won Michigan, he would have headed into Super Tuesday with a lot of momentum, and then he would have taken Ohio for sure. He would have had really smashing victories in the South, and then in a week from now, we're going to have another couple of contests in Mississippi and Alabama. So that's another 90 delegates at stake right there. And I think we just don't know for sure. I think that obviously Mitt Romney is the odds-on favorite to win, but I don't think you should count his chickens before they've hatched.
And John, why do you think Santorum lost Michigan?
Why did he lose? Yeah, I mean, he was behind for a long time, then he popped ahead, and then Mitt Romney had some good ads that were, you know, that attacked him on fiscal issues for supporting earmarks in the past. And I think that the problem with Santorum is that, you know, all these comments, people say, well, why can't he stop talking about, you know, contraception or JFK and religion? Well, these are all comments that he's made in sort of a capacity as between holding office and running for president, that they're all coming back. And they're being played again. And obviously they're his comments, and they're obviously fair game. But he doesn't quite know how to just sidestep an issue and say, well, that's what I said to, you know, I was talking to a Catholic college in Florida, you know, about our faith. And, of course, you know, this is a, you know, if I mention something about, you know, Satan or the father of lies, you know, people of our faith believe in good and evil, and that's all I was talking about, and I'm not going to get bogged down in this. I'm going to focus on, you know, the issues of the day. You know, I mean, he did say, I'm going to talk about, you know, contraception as a candidate. This was in a video from, I think, 2008 and another one from 2011. But he wasn't really bringing up that specific issue. I mean, he was always talking about more in the broader context of religious liberty and economic liberty. But I think that his problem is he gets just bogged down in these in the weeds of these arguments, and he always has to defend himself. And you saw this in the debate where Mitt Romney would bring up something like his past endorsement of liberal Republican Arlen Specter, and rather than having a one-sentence rebuttal and then turning on Mitt Romney for, you know, four or five sentences, he would just take all the time to defend every little aspect of his decision to do something that Republicans now find unpleasant or they dislike.
John McCormick, our guest for All Things Political this hour. He's the staff writer for the Weekly Standard. We go to your phone calls momentarily, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. You can also post comments on our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. I am Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, Jeffrey Masters will join us, Director of Meteorology for Weather Underground, and we'll be looking at the horrible outbreak of tornadoes on Leap Day last week and Wisconsin's strange winter weather. In Kentucky, they're getting snow today after the tornadoes of last week. We'll ask the obvious question, why is this happening, this kind of severe, very unusual weather? All right, Scott from Green Bay, our first caller. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Yeah, in regard to the, excuse me, the Rush Limbaugh comments, and I think he was just, it was beyond over the top. I mean, it was insulting and degrading. But at the same time, you know, the selective outrage on the left is amazing. Kirsten Power is a Democratic strategist, wrote a great article, and it's in Real Clear Politics about misogyny on the left. Oh, Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews, Bill Maher, who called Sarah Palin a dumb C word, which is totally reprehensible, and there really isn't this outrage that you're hearing. Kathy, you made a comment about the Republicans, you know, talking about birth control when we should be talking about jobs. Well, we should be talking about jobs instead of Rush Limbaugh. I'm just wondering why there's this selective outrage on the left when so many in the left, in the media, are so horribly misogynist.
Well, I think that some people on the left have been called for those comments. Of course, that was an outrageous comment. But we're talking about what Rush Limbaugh said. Now, he's a very, very powerful media figure, and you got to wonder why in the world somebody would say that. And I think you need to be called on that. You know, the other people should be called on it too. Rush happened to say this most recently, and he's extremely influential.
You spent the first 10 minutes talking about it. You would never spend the first 10 minutes talking about Bill Maher or Chris Matthews or Oberman. That's the point there. Yeah, you're right. Rush did say it. You would never spend minutes talking about somebody on the left who is just as horrible.
Rush Limbaugh has the largest, most influential media audience of anybody.
So that's the reason why. So what we do is because his audience is larger, you know, we can choose to talk about him. That seems to be a strange metric to measure.
He is an extremely influential conservative, as our guest said, and I think it's perfectly fine for us to discuss this today. And what you said about some of the other people, they should be brought to task for those comments as well. But you can't say that you can't talk about Rush because somebody else said something else.
No, I didn't say that. I'm talking about the selective outrage. I don't have a problem because I think what he did was disgusting and horrible. I don't have a problem with it. I'm talking about the selective outrage. We're very, very mad at Rush. All these other guys combined, well, it's not that important. They should be brought to task, but the thing is, even though they should be, they never are. That's the point.
All right. Thanks, Scott, for the call. John?
Those were similar arguments to what I was making. I think that there's a, you know, it's not just the double standard between Bill Maher and Chris Matthews and those guys and Rush Limbaugh that I see, but I also just find the fact that the objective facts of this public policy debate are being obscured. You know, the Democratic side is saying this is about a ban on contraception. You know, the law that Republicans were going to vote on last week, it only pertained to the new authority granted to the Secretary of Health and Human Services to create the federal government to force giving the federal government power to force private employers to provide benefits to their employees when they might find them morally or religiously objectionable. And the language that Republicans wanted to have a conscience exemption, it was the exact same language that's found in a number of other health care laws already on the books. It was the exact same conscience protections that were in the 1994 Clinton health care bill that Republicans dubbed Hillary Care. So I just think that, I think it's worth, when someone says something bad in the public square, I think that other people in the public square should stand up and denounce it and do that equally with Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives. But I don't think that we should let a nasty comment obscure the fundamental principles, the First Amendment rights that are being trampled on here, that there is something greater at stake than civility here. We're talking about on one side, both sides have important principles. The Democrats say this is about a matter of fundamental women's health, and not all Democrats, obviously. The Democrats who support the mandate, there are plenty of Democrats who don't support this mandate. And on the other side, the opponents of the mandate say, no, this is about freedom. This is about economic freedom. This is about religious freedom. This is about the First Amendment. And if we go down this road, where does it stop? If the government can tell a private insurer it has to pay for something. Not only it has to pay for something, but it pays for something that they find religiously or morally objectionable. I mean, I think that is a dangerous, dangerous precedent, and I think that is a matter of public policy that just must be opposed. So that's what concerns me more, is the public policy issue, and I'm more than happy to comment on in Rush and say I think what he said was wrong, and I'm glad he apologized, and if he needs to give her the woman who testified a call and to really show that he's sincerely sorry, then he can do that. But I personally, as I have in my writing, I've been trying to focus on this public policy debate and just pointing out the facts.
Yeah, and I understand that. But I go back to my question to you, my wondering if this is not off the mark for you, for Republicans, to make this a campaign issue, considering the fact that huge numbers of people use birth control, and so many people are saying this is an issue that has been settled in our society. I wonder if it behooves the Republicans for us to be on this issue as much as we are.
Well, the issue isn't birth control. The issue is government control. Birth control is widely available in our society. The government gives it to the poor through Medicaid. The federal government spends another $300 million a year on a program called Title X to give it to women who are low income and women who are uninsured. Target sells birth control generics, Ortho Tricyclin and Ortho Cyclin Low, for $9 per month. And the reason that the reason that the Democrats are giving in support of this mandate is that a student at Georgetown Law School, because remember, the health care law allows people who are younger to stay on their parents' insurance. But a 30-year-old student at Georgetown Law School needs $3,000 birth control paid for from a Jesuit institution, has to cover that. That's the issue here. That's the issue what we're talking about. We're not talking about birth control. We're talking about government control, federal government control. There are already state birth control mandates that wouldn't be affected by this issue. President Obama made this an issue when he decided to create a new federal mandate that goes into effect in August of 2012. Who picked this issue? President Obama did. President Obama wanted to have a fight about birth control, and his allies are pushing the idea that this is a fight about contraception. This is not a fight about contraception. Contraception, I mean, the idea that it could be illegal. We had George Stephanopoulos, a former aide to President Bill Clinton, who is now a moderator at ABC, ask Republican candidates at a debate a few months ago if contraception could be banned. No one is talking about banning contraception. Talking about banning contraception is like talking about banning gummy bears. I mean, honestly, like, it's just nuts that anyone even thinks that that's an issue. But you have Democrats on the Senate floor, in the U.S. Senate, claiming that Republicans are trying to ban contraception. And we're outraged by a talk radio host's deplorable statement. I'm more outraged by the deplorable lies that are being perpetrated by the pro-mandate supporters in the Senate and the House, and the White House even, President Obama's campaign, than I am one comment by a talk radio host. So that's where I'm coming from.
All right, Rich in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. Well, I guess each of us picks our own set of deplorable lies then to debate, because, I mean, to be blunt about the Blunt Amendment, basically what such a conscience clause would say is that any employer for any belief held, employing another human being could tell the human being what their hours of labor might be used to purchase. And
no, that's false.
Health. Wait. Healthcare being arranged as it is in the United States via employment. Any institution that employs people of a variety of beliefs, they're free. Jewish institutions are free to hire all Jews. Catholic institutions are free to hire all Catholics. Jehovah's Witnesses are free to hire all Jehovah's Witnesses. But if I were working for a firm that was headed by a Jehovah's Witness and I were told in my health insurance policy for employment, you know, blood transfusions are out. That's not something we can hold to in our own personal life. So you as our employee are not eligible for it. I'm sorry, employment law is employment law, and it's to be separated from the idea of religious belief. Religious institutions are exempt in the sense that they do not have to hire non-believers. If they choose to hire people and pay them, they should meet a standard of employment that is universal. That is, you cannot discriminate against me on the basis of my not holding to your beliefs.
All right. Thank you, Rich. John.
There are a few things there. I mean, I just think that not buying something for someone does not amount to discriminating against someone or denying them coverage. If my there's no one saying that someone can't go out and use their wages to spend $9 a month for birth control at Target. Now, the employer might have maybe is a devout Catholic, and he does not want to pay for that directly himself, especially when we're not just talking about contraception here. We're talking about something called Ella, which can be taken 5 days after sex and has been proven to kill embryos and animal testing after pregnancy already occurs. So that's abortion we're talking about here. Now, not buying someone that is not the same thing as denying them their rights or discriminating against them. These under the current law, all this would do is the Blunt Amendment would be the current law. Under current law, people have the freedom to not pay for things that they find morally objectionable. And furthermore, the Blunt Amendment wouldn't affect a number of federal laws or state laws that already mandate certain coverage and prevent discrimination. There are already laws in the books which prevent people from discriminating against people with HIV on the basis of race or age. There are already the Americans for Disabilities Act. There's already a law which prevents insurers from discriminating against pregnant women, that pregnancy and childbirth has to be covered. It doesn't matter whether the woman is married or not. So there have been so many red herrings that have been raised about this. But you know what? I mean, if a Christian Scientist, if he wants to employ someone and he wants to pay them in dollars instead of in health care benefits because he disagrees with health care, why can't we have that? Why can't we? I mean, if someone finds, if someone doesn't want an employer who doesn't pay for their birth control pills, how about they work for a different employer? Why is there the sense of entitlement that anywhere in America, every single employer has to pay for this? Most employers already do. We're talking about a very small minority, and we're a country that's based on minority rights, minority protections, religious freedom that's existed for 220 years in this country. So to pretend that the current law, again, the current policy that we have is somehow a denial of rights or a denial of coverage is just, I think, is simply based on a very, very big misconception.
Thank you, Rich, very much for the call. Willem in Colfax, hi.
Hi. As you know, in regards to this mandate, you know, I pay federal income tax, and some of that money is used to wage war, which I find morally objectionable, but I'm not allowed to say I'm going to withhold my federal income tax because I have a religious or moral...
You need to speak up, Willem. You're too far from the phone.
I'm not, you know, I have to pay federal income tax, and the government might use that for things that I find morally objectionable, like war or nuclear weapons or all sorts of other things. But I'm not allowed to withhold my federal income tax because for religious reasons I say that, well, I don't agree with what every dollar is being spent for. I don't get to make those kind of choices. But that's not my point. My point about Rush Limbaugh is that I listen to him occasionally just to see what sort of things that he's saying, and I find the majority of the time he's really saying just vile lies and really incendiary things. He calls women feminist feminazis, and that's somehow supposed to be funny. And for him to claim, what is conservative about him? And if he has this moral outrage about the birth control pill, then what about this comment about watching the videos? Where's the morality in that? So I think he's a huge hypocrite. And you can't even contact him to disagree with what he says without paying to join his club. So, you know, as far as freedom and all those type of things, you can't even converse with him without paying him first to disagree with him. So I think that he has no standing as a legitimate commentary about anything. He's a huge hypocrite.
All right. Thanks very much for your calls. I want to move to Mitt Romney for just a moment here. You wrote a recent piece, John, talking about Romney's remark that it's very easy to excite the base with incendiary comments, revealing that he doesn't have a very high opinion of the base of the Republican Party. Can we talk about that, why Romney seems to be having a hard time connecting with the base and who the base is of the Republican Party? And then this, the other part of the question, or another question, is he in the long run, if he is the candidate, still likely to get all those people to the polls?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's strange, you know, because if you recall, in 2008, Mitt Romney was the candidate of Rush Limbaugh, was the candidate of all these other talk radio hosts, National Review. Well, he still is the candidate of National Review. But in 2008, Romney was the conservative alternative to John McCain. And something's changed between 2008 and 2012. What's changed? I would say that it was the health care bill, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, which drew attention to what happened in Massachusetts and the Massachusetts health care law, or Romney Care. And when you see the parallels between the two, even though one's at the state level, and Massachusetts is a very liberal state, and they were going to have a health care bill no matter what because there was a Democratic supermajority. Mitt Romney, at the end of the day, he supported that, and he touted it, he highlighted it. He said it was a good model for the rest of the country at different times. And that's the reason. That, you know, the health care law is the animating force of the Tea Party, I would say. That is the thing that unites all conservatives. It unites fiscal conservatives, social conservatives. It's, you know, it's about government power, it's about money, it's about moral issues like abortion. So that's the big issue, I think, for Romney, was his health care law. And I think that's why people didn't want to go into this fight with, you know, the supporter of Romney Care to be the guy to take on Obamacare. So I think that's the issue here. And I think that on a personal level, I mean, Mitt Romney is just... you know, he's just a politician. 99% of these guys are politicians, and he doesn't have a lot of, I don't know, he doesn't seem to just really to resonate on a number of levels.
Mm-hmm. Are you supporting anybody in particular?
Yeah, personally, no, not really. I mean, our primary is tomorrow in Virginia, and the choice is between Ron Paul and Mitt Romney, and if I had to choose between the two of them, I would easily choose Mitt Romney because, well, Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum didn't make the ballot here. So, but even if they were on, I don't know who I would vote for. I really don't. I'm personally kind of ambivalent, and I can see a case for voting either way. But I think I would maybe lean towards Romney out of the current field, but I'm pretty indifferent, which I guess helps me try and be more objective in the Republican race, is mm-hmm. that I really don't have a preference, a strong preference anyway.
Mark in La Crosse, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to comment that I guess one thing that about Rush Limbaugh, I find it hard to listen to Rush a number of times. I am a conservative. I think it's important to point out that even if you are a conservative, that doesn't mean that all the conservatives listen to Rush Limbaugh. I was extremely upset with him. What I feel, he's been pretty much anti-Mitt Romney, which I think is a little bit perplexing to me. I think that the thing that's going on right now as far as emphasizing this whole issue about what Rush said was to create a negative impact on the independent vote and make them feel as though all conservatives are just a duplicate of Rush Limbaugh. Well, we're not. We all have opinions. I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio more than I listen to talk radio on the conservative side. But that's not to say that we still need conservative talk radio to make sure that we're getting a balanced news coverage. I was listening to CNN this morning. I can't even stomach listening to the two new girls that they have on in the morning, because they're so far to the left. So it's guilty on all media, but let's not pigeonhole all conservatives and make us feel as though everyone is lockstep with Rush Limbaugh, because we're not.
All right, Mark. Thanks. John?
Yeah, I think that there are a number of conservatives who, you know, I don't know what the exact numbers are. You know, I've seen the weekly audience for Rush Limbaugh. I mean, I'm sure it's somewhere in the millions. I guess what Bill O'Reilly has, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 million people listening a night. I'd guess that Rush, in the course of 3 hours, you know, people tune in for at least some period of time. You know, he's an important, influential voice, but he's not the head of the Republican Party. You know, he's not Speaker Boehner, he's not Mitch McConnell, he's not Scott Walker or Paul Ryan or Sarah Palin even. So I think that's important just to keep a perspective there.
Yeah, I think it is strange, and I've been in this business for years and years and years, but there is something different about personality-driven instead of truth-driven media, so that be it a liberal MSNBC talk host or Rush Limbaugh or conservative talk show host, that you've got these people on the air and they just talk for all these hours and they tell you what they think about things. And I'm wondering, how did that happen? Who cares what one person thinks? And how did we get to the point where they're on for hours and hours and hours just telling you what they think? It's kind of strange to me. Do you think it is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it sells, it sells. I mean, we live in a place where ratings obviously matter, and if you can get good ratings, then you're going to be on TV or on the radio. So I think that's probably what it comes down to.
Let's go to Mona in Watertown. Hi, Mona.
Hi. I have a question for your guests. This would be regarding the insurances, the religious institutions not having to pay for healthcare, reproductive rights care. My question, or maybe statement, is where is this going to stop if we say it's all right that they don't have to pay for reproductive rights care? Because let's say that they are opposed to maybe health insurance or insurance on their church, and somebody falls and breaks their neck. Couldn't that be considered part of God's master plan?
John?
All I would say is that in terms of questions about scary hypotheticals in the future, that what Republicans and this Blunt Amendment are proposing to do is maintain the conscience protections that have existed for 220 years in the United States of America. So if you can cite examples in recent years where any of these kinds of things have happened, where religious employers or institutions are discriminating against people with HIV, you can go and do that. I would say that you're much more likely to find people who Christian ministries that are devoted specifically to people with HIV. You know, Mother Teresa's nuns, there's all sorts of things all over the world. And I think that the idea that this is going to be abused is wrong. I think the abuse of power is reality, and that the other side is bringing up hypotheticals which just haven't existed under the current policy, which is all people opposed to this mandate are trying to preserve, is these conscience protections that Americans currently have.
John McCormick, staff writer for the Weekly Standard, our guest for all things political. And our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, we're going to talk about the weather, which we think about every day, but boy, did it capture our attention last week with the massive tornado outbreak of stunning violence that swept through the nation's midsection. Deadly tornadoes killing at least 31 people. Why did all of this happen on one day? Why are we seeing this earlier in the year? And our guest is Dr. Jeff Masters. He will be with us. And there's a lot of interest in weather issues, so he will be with us hour two. He's co-founder and director of meteorology at Weather Underground. Back to phone calls for John McCormick. John in Burlington. Hi.
Good morning. I think the whole concept of, you know, defending Rush or what he should say. I think all of this it's just hypocrisy, and it breeds judgment and bullying. It's just this, when anyone's ever questioned on quote-unquote one side versus the other, they don't necessarily always argue the point. They point out what Bill Maher said or what Ed Schultz said, which doesn't get us anywhere. It just kind of endorses the fact that, well, they said it, but they really didn't mean it, or they said it, but they can take it back. And the idea that, you know, we're concerned legally and with what the Catholic Church has to say about, you know, contraception, when the Catholic Church, you know, the morality there, it's ironic to me that they're going to get on a moral, you know, make a moral stand on this when, you know, how many children are molested by priests every year, and they don't even address that.
John, I guess the point is, if you're going to be a bastion of morality, you have to be consistent with your morality. What do you think? John McCormick.
What do I think? That you have to be, that in order to not be required to purchase something that violates your religious or moral beliefs, that you should not be part of an institution that has committed grave moral crimes, individuals within it? I completely disagree with that. We're talking about forcing all Americans, not just the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is easy to beat up, given these scandals that have come about, but I think that the idea that you're going to go and force a college run by Catholic nuns, Belmont Abbey College, you're going to force them, the federal government's going to come in and say, you must pay for something that you find deeply immoral, abortion pills, and even contraception against the teachings of your church. The idea that the federal government has the right to force them to do that, because there have been some priests that have committed grave sins, I don't buy that. I don't think that, I just completely reject that.
Thank you, John, for your call. Dave in Waukesha, hi.
Hi, I have a question and a comment. My question is, the guest said that denial of coverage such as HIV or coverage for pregnancy in the case of unwed women would be discriminatory and is considered discriminatory, yet the denial of coverage for birth control is not discriminatory. How does he draw the line between discriminatory and not discriminatory? My comment is, in terms of the overheated rhetoric, while I agree with it, this is part of the death panels culture that has existed in this country for the last couple years.
I'm not sure I'm getting what you're saying. What do you mean, the death panels culture?
The idea that people can come out and say outlandish statements, such as Democrats are trying to create death panels as part of health care reform, and now we want to have a civil, level-headed dialogue. Sorry. You know, the gauntlet's been thrown, my friend.
John.
I don't think just because someone had incendiary rhetoric that you can go out and lie and claim that there's a contraception ban that Republicans are trying to impose. There are federal laws that, you know, require parity in mental health coverage and stuff like that. We've had for 220 years, people have not been forced to pay for people's contraception and people's abortion pills. So I think that we should maintain that policy. I think it's a policy that has worked. We have contraception is widely available and cheap. It's provided by most insurers voluntarily. They like it. It saves them money. We have it provided by Medicaid for free to the poor. We have it for Title X for $300 million for low-income and uninsured people to get access to it. Again, it can be bought at $9 a month at Target. There is no birth control crisis. There is a crisis of government control, and that's the issue here.
Bill in Madison, hi.
Something the guest said early in the hour concerning his outrage about the double standard that exists, you know, between judging someone like Rush Limbaugh for his outrageous statements versus a Bill Maher, for example. The Republicans, at least in my opinion, they create the invitation for the double standard. I agree there is a double standard, and I agree that it's not fair, but they are the party of truth, justice, and the American way. They are the party of all that is moral, righteous, and Christian. And they have cast themselves this way. They appeal to that voter base. And when people who wear that mantle say something so patently despicable as Rush Limbaugh, it invites special scrutiny. Because, in other words, it's a special level of hypocrisy. The Republicans are baiting the double standard by. And as far as what Rush Limbaugh said, I think Rush Limbaugh is very clever. He's appealing to the base of the Republican Party. That is the base of the Republican Party. Because I've talked to a lot of people who I know who are Rush listeners, and they would never admit in polite company to liking some of the things he says, but if you get them in private, their sentiments lie very close to some of the things that he said last week, and the Republican Party courts that voter, and so they court that kind of double standard.
I don't think there are that many people who agreed with what he had to say last week, Bill. Do you really think that's true? Bill? Bill's not there. John?
You lost him. Well, to respond, I guess, to his point about Republicans inviting a double standard because they portray themselves as a party of justice and morality, I don't think that the Democratic Party portrays itself as the party of, you know, misogyny, and that's what we have coming from people like Bill Maher and Ed Schultz. So I think and furthermore, even if that were the case, it's like saying, you know, there are two ways to avoid hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is violating your own principles, so there are two ways you can avoid hypocrisy. One is to be perfect and never betray your own principles. Two is to have no principles, you know, and then you're never going to betray your principles. So I think just the fact that you know, if a party or a person has principles and sometimes doesn't quite live up to them, it's better to have principles and fall short sometimes than it is to have no principles to begin with.
Let's go next to Jillian from Madison. Hi.
Yes, good morning, Kathleen and your guest. I would like to make a point, if I could just have a little time to say where I'm coming from. Who gets what would not even be an issue if we had universal single-payer health care, instead of which billions of dollars by the health industry was spent lobbying against it. The $350 billion that goes to the insurance companies that made sure that they stayed in the picture, which covers CEOs, huge salaries and benefits, waste and administrative costs, that's 30% of, or 30 cents on every dollar, versus the 3% administrative costs, for instance, if we had universal single-payer system. 50 million people currently have no health insurance. 45,000 people die every year because they don't have any. That's 120 Americans die every day for lack of health insurance. And then your guest talks about, you know, if you don't want to work there, then go somewhere else. Well, we obviously are in a huge problem economically. People just can't get up and leave their jobs because that's where their insurance is. If we had universal health care, they would have the freedom to go to change jobs.
All right, John.
Well, I actually agree that employer-provided insurance is a problem, and I think that single-payer would actually keep the problem, because every health care decision would ultimately be everybody else's problem. Once you have the federal government paying for everything, your health care decisions are ultimately my interest, everybody's interest, and we end up having national standards, and we have problems with wait lists and denial of care, and I don't think that a single-payer system works all too well like they have in Canada. I think that what we need is a free-market healthcare system. I think that rather than giving employers a tax break so that they can offer their insurance to their employees, I think that individuals should get the tax break, and then individuals can take their own insurance, and, you know, they can go from job to job, and it doesn't depend on their employer, that they can go and get that they can buy an insurance plan that pays for 100% of any kind of contraception if they want it. They can buy an insurance plan that doesn't pay for any contraception if they want it. I mean, that to me is freedom, and that to me would be fair. But we're in this big problem
like the caller just suggested, in large part because we have this employer-provided health care insurance system, which got set up, I believe, you know, during World War II or in that era, and we've just kind of been stuck with it. I think if we could have the same tax break provided to individuals, that would be really, really a good idea, and that would help people. If we didn't have employers providing it all, that people would have a lot more freedom, and then we wouldn't have these culture war issues where somebody gets upset because they're feeling compelled to pay for something that violates their religious or moral convictions.
Thanks, Julian, for the call. Well, John, we didn't cover a lot of territory, but I guess it's the nature of where we are this Monday, the 5th of March. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
John McCormick from the Weekly Standard, where he is a staff writer, and we also like to... A lot of people have Wisconsin connections. He grew up and was born in Wisconsin as well, so we thank him for being with us. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We will be covering the results, of course, of Super Tuesday on Wednesday, so... make sure that you know that. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News coming up, and we'll continue and talk about the weather.